If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Okay, you could be at the Einstein level or in the middle with the rest of the world or even on the slow end of the scale. Wherever you are, you can improve yourself.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Walker Huey is originally from Milan, Tennessee, where he then moved to Southern California. While he was in Southern California, built a residential property management company, as well as bought residential property investments here in West Tennessee. And now he resides back in Memphis, where he runs his property management company, buys single-family homes, as well as actively invests and is scaling into commercial real estate. Hey, Walker, welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Man, this is awesome. Pleasure to have you on. It's also great to have, obviously, a fellow Memphian. For those of you who aren't in Memphis, that's what we're called, is Memphian. So good to have a fellow Memphian here on the show. Would love to just hear your story, if you can, brief story of kind of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there in real estate.
Sure. Yeah. So I kind of wore a lot of different hats. I had a business out in Southern California, and then I had the business here in West Tennessee. So I'm originally from a small town, Milan. It's about an hour and a half northeast of Memphis on I-40, just above Jackson. And I was out in Southern California doing development and investments out there. And every time I would come home, there was such a wild discrepancy in price. I mean, literally an order of magnitude different. You know, I might be looking at a $400,000 deal in California and looking at a $40,000 deal in Milan. So, you know, wildly different there, and then wildly different investment characteristics, where Southern California does this, you ride the roller coaster, right? Lots of big swings, a lot of appreciation, also drops really fast when the market turns down. Rural West Tennessee, that's not so much the case. It's very flat and steady. Not a lot of appreciation. It was not unusual in SoCal to have a property jump by $100,000 in 6 months and you didn't do anything. It was, you know, we called it the paint the front door, mow the grass, and buy something at $400 and sell it at $500 kind of business model, right? And in the go-go days, you know, 04, 05, that was literally what we were doing. And we were making, I would make a pop out there. You know, you make a hit a big lick. And then I would come back here and put it into cash flowing real estate, which wound up kind of being a good balance because you have kind of opposite ends of the spectrum from an appreciation versus cash flow. Nothing in SoCal cash flowed unless you put down like 50%, you know, I mean, unless you limited your leverage to under 60% leverage, which, you know, is tough to do. If you're trying to grow, everything was cash flow negative at that point in time. And in West Tennessee, everything was cash flow positive, but nothing was appreciating that dramatically. So those two business models were kind of complementary. And I learned kind of a lot from the opposite ends of the spectrum from those two. And that's kind of what I did for a bunch of years, where I would do larger, high dollar SoCal deals and then continue to grow a rental portfolio in rural West Tennessee. And woke up one day and had enough doors where we had to, you know, like so many other people, you know, you realize you got to start building out some infrastructure. So, you know, we started hiring some people, and that led, you know, first you start off small and then you hire one or two more, you know, you get a maintenance guy, maybe you get somebody to help you keep your books, you know, things like that. And then the next thing you know, you turn around and, you know, you're north of 100 doors. And, you know, I think our team has 20 people on it. You know, we're doing property management for several hundred other properties, because once you have your team in place, it makes sense to charge because you're doing the same thing. So you might as well do it for other people. So we kind of grew a business. We've got, I'm the co-owner along with my partner up in Milan, own LA Realty. We've got 13 or 14 real estate agents up there, you know, kind of fluctuates, agents come and go. And we've got a property management division. We've got our maintenance division. We've got our in-house back office team, does all our bookkeeping and admin work. And, you know, like I say, probably somewhere around 20 people. Our door count fluctuates. The market is strong right now. So we've been selling a lot of doors. We got up close to 200 at one point in time. And we just, in the last 12 months, have sold a lot of those off to our in-house investors who want to retain the management with us. basically, they're just buying a turnkey cash flow and property. And it's the first time you do a deal with somebody, it's hard. The second time it gets easier. The third time it's easier and easier. So most of these guys are repeat customers who started off with just one or two properties. Maybe they brought some outside properties to us. Maybe we knew them in another life outside of real estate, and they just had some cash lying around. They wanted to get going. And then after, you know, after they've seen that it works the first few times, then they want to scale up, you know? So like we had a guy who bought one house from us, and then he bought a second, and then he, you know, did five or six. And next week he's going to be closing on a bulk purchase of 10 houses from us. So he'll have a portfolio of, I don't know, you know, 15 or 20 houses of ours at that point. So that's kind of a model that we're doing up in Milan, where, you know, we still are buying opportunistically. Absolutely. We just don't find as many deals as we used to. And it's a very, very similar thing to what you see the guys here in town do, like Memphis Invest and the Clothier family and those guys. We're just doing it on a much smaller scale. They're much, much bigger, but it's very similar there.
Right. Did you develop that property management company while you were out in Southern California?
So, you know, my partner in Milan, who is kind of the boots on the ground guy, Josh Arnold, he's the main guy there in town. He's always been managing properties and was managing mine. And then as we grew, we kind of fell into a natural partnership. We have complementary skill sets. And, you know, I'm strong where he's weak. And then he, you know, he has things that I need on my side. And so vice versa. So it wound up being a good partnership. And when we first got started, you know, just had a few doors, he was managing my stuff, doing everything, knocking on the doors, doing everything. Right. And then as we grew, we started hiring some people, and then we started managing for other people. So our headcount internally from an HR standpoint grew, and then our door count, both from an acquisition standpoint and external third party management, grew as well. And so now we're co-owners of the firm, and he still will get involved when and where he needs to. I'm remote. You know, I'm not in Milan. But that has just been an organic growth over the last 15 plus years.
Right. No, that's really cool. That's really cool. Now, is that your primary focus now, or have you kind of expanded your kind of target, I guess, target acquisitions, I guess, because it pertains to real estate? Are you still just looking for single family alone, or have you gone into your next asset class?
We've definitely moved more into the commercial space, both up in West Tennessee and then here in Memphis as well. Yeah, my sister married Brown Gill with the Gill family, Ray and Brown Gill. They've done several large commercial deals. I mean, you know, they've been doing development here in Memphis for multiple generations. So they're a very successful family. And that helps to be in-laws with those guys. So they have been wonderful as far as sharing their time and knowledge with me and opening some doors for opportunities. And so I'm doing some larger commercial stuff here in Memphis. So it's sort of a natural progression of at least what I see when I talk to people. You know, like so many other guys, you know, we started off with like one house, and then, you know, you buy two, and then, you know, maybe somewhere along the way you buy a triplex or whatever, and you scale it up from there. Right. And so we still have a bunch of doors. We're still north of 100 right now, but the dollar figure wise, you can scale up in real estate so much easier on the commercial side of the house. So it's way easier to do one $3 or $4 or $5 million deal than it is to try and go buy 50 single family homes. So I would say I'm swinging a bigger stick on the commercial side from a dollar volume transactional standpoint. We're not stopping on the single family home side because that's a skill set that got developed over a bunch of years, and we're good at it, and we'll keep doing it. Aren't quite as many opportunities there because housing and the residential side has heated up so much in the last 18 months, you know, specifically because of Corona and COVID, you know, which I didn't see coming. Who knew that COVID was going to hit and all of a sudden everybody's houses were going to be worth way more, you know?
Right.
I didn't see that coming. But yeah, we're shifting more over to the commercial side of the house. And like I said, that's a path that you see so many kind of self-starting guys do, where they, you know, start off a couple of rent houses, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they've got a whole business. And then as you get more capital and you get more experience, you get more lending firepower, then you just naturally move over into the seven-figure commercial stuff.
Right. What is a good, or what are you currently investing in as it pertains to commercial real estate?
I'm really opportunistic. So, you know, you have some guys who only do multifamily. You have some guys who only do office. And there's something to be said for doing one thing and doing it really, really well. I respect those guys because they know what they're, you know, it's like for a man with a hammer, the whole world looks like it's full of nails. They only do one thing. I'm in growth mode right now. So I'm more opportunistic of doing whatever comes along. You know, it might be a small office deal. It might be a small retail center. It might be self-storage. You know, I own small versions of all that stuff. I'd love to get bigger. But like the last three commercial deals I did, one was office. Well, two were office. One was a retail center. And then I'm in the middle of doing a development deal right now that will probably wind up being office, but it's spec space that could go either way.
Interesting. Now, we're recording this in early 2021, and office space is not an asset class that everybody's in love with.
Now, right? I might be like, man, that was a terrible idea.
But dude, talk to us about that. Like, what does that look like? I mean, when you guys are forecasting, who are the tenants that are going in there? Is it, how are you making that an attractive niche in this environment?
Yeah, so here in Memphis, I'm either buying based on the existing, like anything, any asset, the value is just the net present value of the future cash flows, right? So if it's an existing occupied tenant, then you're evaluating their credit worthiness and the lease, and you're applying a discount, and you're coming up with some value, and the purchase price is either over or under that value. And if it's under, then it's a go. So the ones that were, most of the stuff that I'm buying already have tenants in place. And then you're just kind of buying an income stream. And it's just a function of trying to find a motivated seller with a good, solid income stream where the deal makes sense. I did a couple of purchases where there was a partnership that was dissolving. You know, they were basically having a business divorce. And that's a, you know, a good opportunity to try and pick something up in that scenario. But if I'm looking at something from a spec or development or empty space standpoint, then I really try and look at the corner, because that matters where you're at, what part of the world you're in, right? So the deal that I'm doing right now that's vacant, I'm hopeful that it is the right spot in the world, you know, that whole location thing, you know?
Right.
You know, try and deliver a good quality product, put in a good remodel. And I mean, like, the world hasn't stopped. Is it different than it was a year ago? Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, the economy is still going. People still go to work. Businesses still have to go somewhere. Now, you know, we're recording this for posterity. So a year from now, if that thing's still vacant, I'll be like, maybe I should have rethought that, you know? So we'll see.
Right. And so that's a ground up development, the one you're talking about right now.
It's an existing building that had a fire. So it's basically kind of a full remodel.
Gotcha. Okay. So you're building out some office space and you got your hands in some other commercial assets. I know you said you're opportunistic, but if you had to have your pick of the litter, like, what would 2021 look like for you when it comes to your future acquisitions?
Man, just like your podcast is about, I'd like to scale up. I think because swinging a bigger stick is really where it's at. I mean, I've been in the boat where, you know, I don't know, you have 20 single family homes, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. And, you know, maybe let's just say that's $1 million or $2 million worth of gross real estate.
Sure.
And they're cash flowing at, let's say, a double digit cap rate. Okay. You're doing really good. I mean, That's better than a sharp stick in the eye.
Sure.
But if you look at those numbers, you've got to wait 15 years to get $1 million paid off. And your free cash flow is not really free cash flow. It's really more like a reserve for future expenses. It's dangerous to live out of that. You know, you need to really set it aside for when you have bumps in the road and vacancies and unexpected repairs and all that stuff, right? So if you can scale that up, you know, I've been in this boat, you know, where you get to north of 100 doors and now you're at, you know, 10 million or whatever. Okay, well, now you're moving the stick with an extra zero on there, and that's great. Okay, well, that's a good thing. But if you could really scale up in a hurry, that's the goal. And, you know, that's what your whole podcast is about. The problem is that you've got to do it smart, because growth is like so many other things in life. It's double-edged. I mean, it can, you know, it's like fire or a weapon or anything else. It can be used for gain and good. It can also cause harm. So you have to grow the right way. And a lot of that is being smart in your acquisitions and having the right team in place to handle that. So I guess the short answer to your question would be is if a lot of wonderful opportunities came along and then they were in a wheelhouse that I understood, you know, if Jeff Bezos with Amazon came and knocked on my door and said, I want you to go out and build out all these great server centers throughout Europe. I mean, that sounds like a great opportunity, but I don't have a skill set in that. So I doubt he's going to call me, right? But I do have a skill set in certain, you know, like in a big enough box to be able to operate in real estate. And hopefully you see enough good deals in that world to be able to move the needle and grow.
Right, right. And what's that look like other than having, you know, extended family in the commercial industry? What's it look like for you as you source deals? I mean, obviously on the single family side, you guys have probably done all the traditional marketing, you know, channels, but what's that look like for you? How are you marketing for future commercial deals?
Yeah. So you mean from the acquisition side or from the capital side?
Acquisition side.
Acquisition side is really, you don't find a lot of them on the open market, you know, like everything. You know, like you just have to, I mean, it sounds weird to say, but sometimes they just kind of come to you sort of thing. You know, like they just, they float through the universe and they bump into you, you know, right. Like, yeah, I don't know where, how the next deal will come my way. I doubt I'll be looking on CoStar or whatever it is, and it'll just be sitting there ready to be bought, you know?
Right.
So I don't know how they get generated, but they do get generated, and hopefully at a higher volume level. Just get a phone call. You're like, hey man, there's this next door neighbor who's got a cousin, and you know, it goes from there, you know?
Yes. Been there plenty of times. And it sounds like maybe just developing your network might be part of it, where people know what you buy.
Yeah. And again, being with Ray and Brown Gill has been a huge asset to me. They've been great. They are larger developers. And so they might take a pass on a smaller transaction that might be a great fit for me. So that's been a huge asset as well.
Sure. Talk to me about your team. Obviously you've got your hands in a lot of different asset classes. So how have you scaled your team such that you aren't the one wearing all the hats?
Yeah, that's one of those challenges that everybody encounters, right? Because when you start, especially from a bootstrap, you know, one property and trade it up to two kind of standpoint, you do wear all the hats, mostly because you can't afford to hire a bunch of people there at the get-go.
Right.
And then you realize, and when I say you, I mean, this is like a path that everyone finds themselves on to a greater or lesser extent. You realize that to truly grow, you have to have the right team in place. And it's a transition that takes place. It doesn't happen overnight. On the Milan side of the house, that's happened over 15 years. So, you know, most of our growth has happened over the last five, you know, that, we've been hiring steadily there and continue to try and hire. And if you can find good people, you know, you can, it's kind of like that old saying where, you know, if they're not the right fit, no matter how cheap they are, you're overpaying. And if they are good, it doesn't matter. You can never pay them enough kind of thing.
Right.
And I'm kind of a believer in that. If you find the right bookkeeper, if you find the right property manager, somebody you can just talk to tenants and have that gift of gab and make everyone feel comfortable with you, and also let all the negativity brush it off their shoulders, because there's a lot of that in the property management world. You can find the right broker who can do deals. You know, if you can find all these right people who round peg, round hole, then you can really, it's like putting the right pieces in the engine that makes the car run. You know, it's, you can get the wrong one and maybe limp down the road, but you're way better off getting the right one and being fit and set good for the long term. So that's been a focus, trying to build out our headcount up there. I'm still in the process of building the team out here locally. So right now it's primarily third-party stuff, you know, from a third party. So not a lot of W-2 payroll here in Memphis specific.
Got it. Now, are you building a property management company here in Memphis as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something that I need to look at down the road. I'm at enough doors here in town where it would make sense to do that. And I've kind of been down that path once where kind of organically created something. So I'd like to create it a little faster. It's just, you know, how many hours in the day are there to do what you want to do, you know? And right now I've got it with a third party manager and it's working. It's something that I need to take a hard look at. It's just one of those, it hasn't been broken yet, so I haven't tried to fix it. But I know that at some point in time, especially if I continue to acquire on the single family side here in town, I need to bring it all in-house.
Right, right. Yeah, I think that would be an interesting lens with which to do business, because you're viewing third-party management probably, you know, from a very different perspective than the rest of us would, because we don't necessarily have a property management company. So either you're the best, you're the best, or their worst client, because you either understand their pains and give them a pass, or you go, hey man, this is not the way this is supposed to be done.
I'm both. I'm their best and worst client. I'm both. Yeah, I'll tell you that.
right.
Yeah. I'm currently their biggest client. And I'm also the guy that calls them up and I'm like, hey, let's talk about this.
Right. Yeah, right, right. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Well, and it sounds obviously you guys have developed a great system and process there. So I'm sure it's all good. But yeah, that would be an interesting position to be in. Let's jump into the final four if we can. As you have scaled, like if you were to give one piece of advice to an aspiring investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
It would be to go as big and as hard as you are comfortable going with the right people. Okay, so this is one of those, you know, what one piece of advice. And there's a few things that go into this, so it's kind of like a little bit more than just one piece.
Sure.
But finding the right team, finding the right CPA, finding the right brokers, finding the right property managers. If you're growing without that, it's kind of like driving blind, because it's very dangerous to add zeros and commas, especially when you're using leverage. You know, if you've got $5,000 a month in mortgage payments, you know, that's kind of a lot. But if the world went to hell in a handbasket, maybe you're in a position where you could float that. But if you bump it up and now you're doing 50 grand a month in mortgage payments, you've got to have a team that you believe in from all angles. And time is your greatest ally. You have the ability to pay down. You can start with one house on a 15 or 20 year mortgage, or you can hurry up and get it up to 50 or 100 or jump over to the commercial side. But time is your greatest ally. So try and scale up now so that you can be paying it down as you go, because those years will continue flying off the calendar. And just find a way to overcome whatever's in front of you to get the boulders rolled to the top of the hill, to do bigger deals, to do more deals, to just have a higher volume, because that's where it's at in real estate. The guy with 8 does better than the guy with 2, and the guy with 80 does better than the guy with 8. So, and I don't mean from a door count standpoint. I mean from an overall dollar. If you have one deal, but it's a $50 million multifamily apartment deal, well, you know, you're probably doing pretty good, right?
Right.
So, you know, just get as large as you can smartly with the right people by your side as fast as you can. I mean, right. That's the ultimate goal.
No, that's awesome. That's great advice. When it comes to investing in yourself, what's one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Yeah, okay. So this one I'm going to throw off on my partner. He's the best I've ever seen at this. It's self-improvement and growth. We all get the hands that we get dealt in life. You know, you're only going to be as tall as you're going to be. I'd like to be 6'6". I'm not. Okay. So you get dealt a hand in life. What he does every day is some self-growth, self-study, self-improvement kind of things. And maybe that's just a YouTube thing, or maybe it's reading a new book, or whatever it is. Whatever your deck of cards has been dealt is, no matter where it is on the spectrum, you know, you got a full bell curve distribution, okay? You could be at the Einstein level or in the middle with the rest of the world, or even on the slow end of the scale. Wherever you are, you can improve yourself. And so he's really great at that. You know, he sent me a text with a YouTube link in it from a Jim Rohn starting the new year thing. Probably, and I think that this was something recorded back in the 70s, but it is every bit as relevant today, starting 2021, as it was back then, because he's one of the greatest public speakers and the greatest self-improvement guys has probably ever lived. And so I wouldn't dig through and look for that and start my year off with that, but he did. And he sent it to me. And so I had a drive and I didn't have anything to do. So I just clicked on it and listened to it. And it just reminded me that I need to stay focused on it. He's focused on it. We can all better ourselves at some level.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. When it comes to giving back, what's one way you're making the world a better place?
Okay. So I'm a believer, you know, people often say that it's money's the root of all evil. I don't think that's the case. You know, there's that purple verse that actually says it's the love of money that's the root of all evil.
Correct.
All right. So
thank you for quoting that properly.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a believer in that. Trying to do as good as you can and then use your gifts and what you've been blessed with to turn around and help the world at that future point in time. I've got a lot of plans for if the Tooth Fairy comes and puts a lot of money under my pillow one day, of how I would use that wisely. And so I think that once you've developed a skill set, running a business or allocating capital or compounding or any of those things, you can use that for whatever direction you want to. If you want to use it for growing your personal net worth, great. I've got nothing against, I'm the case study for trying to do that. But you can also use it to set up an endowment to try and put as many kids to college as you can, right? And you're going to put more of them to school if you can compound at 8% than if you compound at 4%. I mean, that's just what it boils down to. So I'm a believer in trying to do something like that with your skill set in business.
Right. No, that's awesome. That's awesome. And Walker, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
The best way to do that is to reach out to you and you decide whether you want to send them my way or not.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We can do that. If you want to get a hold of Walker, you can reach out to me. You've got all my information here in the show notes. Walker, thanks so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it. And yeah, I appreciate your insights.
Absolutely.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.